In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. The appearance of the Lord on the road to Emmaus speaks to anyone here who has struggled with the destiny of being alone, the obnoxious future of being a widow or a widower, or someone who really would like to be married and isn't or can't be or has never had the chance, and anyone who is sort of remembering and knowing what it's going to be like and what it is like to be alone. You know, John Donne did us a big disservice when he wrote a poem that talked about no man as an island, because it's manifestly not true. I assume he wrote that poem early, before he really got into the depth of his theology. But we are islands when it comes to death. We do die alone, and we live our lives in constant and a total neurotic fear of being left alone, being alone, and being not with someone we love. So this message, which is from the appearance of Jesus on the road to Emmaus, is of the message of Easter to anyone here who's ever dealt with the possibility of or had the experience of being alone. Now, the story of Jesus' appearance on the road to Emmaus is typical of the resurrection appearances, as they are usually called, because it has a very uncommon phenomenology, or it has a couple of details which are very unusual, which radiate historical reminiscence. Remember, this is not a fairy tale for children, although it has great carry for children, but it was reminiscences of these men and women who were quite struck by these remarkable events. And what happens is that there are strange facts, Twilight Zone facts. For example, Mary Magdalene thought he was the gardener and talked with him and didn't know it was he. These two men walked for 7 miles, believe me, and they didn't realize that they were talking with a man whom they just lost 2 days ago. Now, some of us sort of aren't ready to see our, you know, the one we loved who died 10 years ago, and we might have that conversation and be taken aback. Hello? But dead again. This is different. Obviously, his bodily appearance was unusual and uncharacteristic of normality. The same happens when he wasn't recognized on the Sea of Galilee, and certainly here. Because it says in verse 28 of Luke 24, as they drew near to the village to which they were going, he appeared to be going further. What is that? What do you mean appeared to be going? Where was he going? Wasn't he there for them? Who was he going to see? Why did he appear to be going somewhere else? It's like that scene in Mark 6, 48, when he's walking on the water and the disciples are making heavy weather trying to pilot their boat, and Jesus walks past them. It says he walked as if to pass by them. What is that all about? Well, God, when it comes to things like resurrection, body, and miracles, is not playing by my rules, and certainly not by anybody else's we've ever met. And so this is true. You see, this really happened. They wouldn't have put that strange, odd reminiscence. It's not Jack in the Box. He meant to go on. So what is this? Well, it's a true reminiscence of a remarkable mystery. But they constrained him. That is to say, they put pressure on him to stay. This is verse 29. Stay with us, in the old translation, abide with us. For it is towards evening, and the day is now far spent. Now that's very powerful, because you and I have spent our life mourning people who are no longer here. Let's just think about romance for a minute. Now, you're not me, and I'm not you, but you were once somebody that you're not. That is to say, you were a teenager once. Now, anyone here who has ever been dumped, has ever been divorced against their will, who has ever been blown away by a catastrophic romantic rejection, will understand the power of stay with us. In fact, this is not trivial. This is, in fact, at the deepest moment of human need. If you've ever lost the one you love out of rejection, you will know that you got down on your knees and said, look, I've done terribly and I've been awful and you don't love me anymore, but stay with me. Whatever you do, stay with me. Now, this is where Journey has something to teach us. I'm talking about the schlocky, wonderful group from the 1970s, Journey. And in their song, Lights of the City, which is 1978. And so he says, I'll do anything if y'all just stay with me a while. If you'll just stay with me a while. Now, why is that song reach us? Because I will, and you will. You will do anything if you'll just stay with me a while. I used to meet fellas who had left their marriages. It never happens in Birmingham, but it used to happen in Westchester County. And these fellas would have left their marriage, and there was also, they always left, you know, the marriage for their true love, who they'd known for 2 years, as opposed to the woman they'd been living with 15. And they would leave the woman, and as always happens, after about 6 weeks or 6 minutes or 6 months, the thing fell apart, and it was a disaster, and he'd come crawling back, you know, y'all come running back, like the stone said, and he came running back to his first wife, and he said, please, take me back, I've made a terrible mistake, don't leave me, take me back. And you know what she would always say? I'm hurt too much, it's too late. And then she'd add a postscript, and I've met somebody. Now, what, it's too late. And this is as funny as it is serious. Stay with us. I'd constrain you. I'll do anything if you'll just stay with me a while. But it's not all that. He says, stay with us, they say. Stay with us. But then they add something. For it is towards evening, and the day is now far spent. Now, what's that about? Towards evening means death is coming. In other words, stay with me. Have you ever loved someone who died and you were at the hospital or you were on the road after the accident and they were bleeding and you'd say, and this has happened in many people's lives and it happens every day at St. Vincent's or Baptist Montclair, UAB, don't die, honey, don't die. Just whatever you do, don't die. I'll do anything, just don't die. And then they die. But you do anything, I'll do anything. But don't die. You see, it's coming towards evening, and death is the great divider. And but he also says, the day is now far spent. Stay with me, for it is coming on death, and I do not want to be alone. And the day is now far spent. Well, that just means I've done a lot of bad things. My life is not a, it's, I've put, what do they say in England? I've put ink on my blotter. There's trouble here. If you look at the record, it's not so great. There's some things left undone and there's some things done. And I don't want to be alone when it's my own fault. You know, a lot of people are alone right out of their own fault. This is not a judgment, it's simply true. There are a lot of people who are, a lot of men, you know, crave the company of women. And they hate women. And it's the strangest thing. I'll do anything if you'll just stay a while, but I'll do everything I can to get you to go. And there are women who do this, and there are men who do it, and there are people who do it. And that's why the day is now far spent. It's getting late. There's a lot of water under the bridge. And remember, cry over spilt milk. Always cry over spilt milk. You can't unspill it, but you can cry and it helps. Really, you stay. Male, female, divorce, gender, stay, because the day is now evening. Don't die on me. Honey, don't die on me. Whatever you do, don't die on me. And the day is now far spent. I did it to myself. I'm my own worst enemy. The reason I'm alone is because I've been an SOV, that's why. The reason why I'm alone is because I've been a positive Jezebel, and my children don't like me. Matter of fact, my children don't like to spend time with me, and I don't understand. I don't understand. Well, the day is far spent. Now, I say all that because that's the condition to which Easter always replies. It says in verse 29, when they said, abide with us, come on, it's constraining, for it is toward evening, and the day is now far spent. So he went in to stay with them. He went in to stay with them. Now what happens in life is that everything goes by. You stay with me, honey, and I'll make you an idol. And after you're dead, I'll live in your shadow. And I'll live forever as a mourner. But you're going by me, and I can't hold on to you because you're not here anymore. They said to him, stay with me, and he went in. Now, this is unique in human history. No one has ever been risen from the dead, ever. I don't care what they say about religious revival in the Philippines, don't believe it. Lazarus, it happened, but he died later. There's a tombstone. There's a tombstone in the Holy Land, and it says Lazarus. Born on such and such a date, raised on such and such a date, died again on such and such a date. Only one man has ever come and stayed and come back, and this is this man. He came into them, and he stayed, and he did something very powerful. When he broke the bread, he reminded them of the last time he'd been with them. Now, the last time he had been with them was a very bittersweet kind of pre-funeral wake. If you're Irish, you know what I'm talking about. It's the wake that happens before the funeral. It's the pre-funeral wake that we know as the Last Supper, and they knew as the most excruciating moment of their entire lives. And he had told them that the testament that I leave with you is written in blood. Translate, God is present now in weakness. He's not present in strength. You know, I don't care who you are, he's never present in strength. When you got the job, the big raise, he wasn't present there. You were present for 5 minutes, and then you forgot about it and got fired anyway. When you the trophy wife, present, yeah, for a little while, but just wait and see. When your child finally made a great success, well, that's wonderful, but did you thank God? That was wonderful, but where was God really with you? He was with you when he was with John Bunyan in the 16th century. John Bunyan, who never said a thing about his life entirely, and he wrote 5,000 pages and never once said anything about himself, except that he had one blind child. God is in the fissures. God is in the brokenness. It says that he broke the bread, and they said, ah, he is here, not in strength, but he is here in my need. God meets me in my point of need. God meets me in my aloneness. Now let's wrap this up. If you are a widow or a widower, he's not here or she's not here, but talk to Christ and he'll come in and stay a while. He's not going to leave you. I was with a hotshot professor from New York a couple weeks ago somewhere, a legal guy, and he looked like a famous man, as it turns out, and it looks like every single red corpuscle had been drained from his body. Well, come to find out, his wife died in 1988, Dean Zoll, 1988. I've remarried, happily, quotation marks, but as I talked to him, his great loss was revealed in every sallow negation on his whitened face. He needs to hear, and you need to hear, that you are not alone, and the one who can stay is the one who rose from the dead. If you're single, if you're a single person and you say, why am I single, or I'm single and unhappy, or I wish I had somebody in some form or another to share my life with me, you're barking up the wrong tree until you talk to him and say, why won't you stay a while? And it says that he went in and he stayed with them and he remained with them. If you're bereaved or mourning, you remember that he said, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Why do you think that was? Because he rose from the dead. He's with us now. Your husband left. Your son left. God has them, but you're here. And he comes in, and he's with you. But one last thing. Maybe you're a prospective mourner. Now look, do you live with anyone who's tight? Do you live with anyone who's tight with money? That person is a prospective mourner. Because the person who is tight is someone who is afraid and clutches. And that's mourning. They're mourning in advance. That's why they hold on to things. Do you live with any control freaks? It's really fun. You know, my wife lives with one. And any control freak is a potential mourner because he's afraid that if he doesn't do it himself, he's going to be left all alone, and he's going to be alone and lost and out on a limb with something cut off, and it's terrible. Maybe you're picky. You know anybody who's really critical? You know, there are people who are never satisfied. Maybe you know one of them. Maybe you have a child who's like that. Maybe you're married to one. Nothing you can do satisfies. sometimes a few of my wife's clients who are so dear. They are so incredibly unsatisfied. Nothing satisfies, and you sort of make a living out of being critical and unsatisfied. And then, of course, when the project is done, you sell your house. So who is this about? It's about you, because you're a prospective mourner. You cannot trust life. You cannot trust anybody. And living with people who are prospective mourners, which you and I are, is disaster. And so what we need to do is we need to say, look, nothing is going to satisfy me. It's sailing right past me and I can grab it and it's not enough. Only the risen one who beat death could possibly satisfy me forever. Well, the last line, I'm a great Savoyard. Now, what is a Savoyard? It's a person who loves Gilbert and Sullivan. A Savoyard is a slang expression for someone who loves Gilbert and Sullivan. Well, I love it so much since I was 6 years old, but there's not one single redemptive moment or Christian moment in the entire work of Gilbert and Sullivan, even though it is fabulous. And there's this movie called Topsy Turvy about Gilbert and Sullivan. And it's about a heroin addict and a drunk and a very troubled person. And it's all really, that's what it's about. And Gilbert and Sullivan supposedly wrote this incredibly moving piece which closes the movie, and we all heard it. It's when Yum Yum sings a song to Yankee Poo, who's not there, and she sings it to the moon. Do you remember that song? You don't have to be a Savoyard. Love, you know? I'm here, and he's far away in prison, but the moon is shining over him, and it's shining over here, so we're together. Well, the moon is, what is the moon? I saw Space 1999, that wonderful television show where the moon goes out of its orbit. The moon rises and it sets. The moon's not going to be here in 5 billion years, but you're going to be somewhere. Now, that is classic. The world tries to make us think that the answer to our problems is singing a song to an abstraction called the moon. If he's not here and I'm not here, I don't care that the moon is here. He's not with me and I'm not with him. I want somebody to come in and stay a while. And that's where Christianity challenges the world. There is nothing in this world that has ever risen from the dead and it is eternal, save one man who rose from the dead historically and is here now in our room. And I'm offering that to you as a mourner or as a prospective mourner to get down on your knees afresh and say, all right, you're here, you're not dead, and you're real. Come in to my heart where I need you. That is the message for today. Amen.